Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the commercial news for Saturday and Sunday, December 13th and 14th, 2025. As always, we'll start on the first page, we'll work our way through local news, then we'll see if there's anything interesting going on in our state. We'll take a break around midday, or mid-read, I guess, and take a look at our obituaries, and then we'll capture up with some feature stories and sports as we round out our 30 minutes together. I hope you all have stayed warm this past weekend. That was a little bit of a shock. Well, let's get started today on the main page, and our top of the headline is Ringing for Donations. Red Kettle campaign goal is 40,000. This comes to us by our reporter, Christy Jankowski. The Salvation Army Red Kettle theme this year is Give with Joy. And while the bell ringers will stop on Christmas Eve, the campaign runs until January 31st. Having volunteered myself many times during Christmas and ringing, I've noticed that's always the case. Lieutenant Catherine Reed, who has served with the Salvation Army since 2014, anytime I'm at the kettle, everyone always comes up and they're excited to give and they just have this beautiful spirit. And a lot of times we hear stories in the ways that the Salvation Army have impacted their life or their family or their parents. It's always a great experience for us. It's a blessing because we see that impact throughout the whole year. Reed has served with Danville Chapter since 2023, said the Vermilion County Campaign's goal. For the kettle, Red Kettle is $40,000. However, they're not even halfway to that goal. Hopefully people will take the opportunity to go to register to ring. We could really use more ringers. Reed said currently they have raised around $17,000. We've seen miracles happen. Honestly, every penny that someone gives us, it matters because we do our best to return it back to the community. 85 cents of every dollar goes right back out, Reed added. It contributes to our food pantry, social service needs within our community. It allows kids to go to camp and have other opportunities by way of the Salvation Army. And so it's truly a blessing and privilege to be able to see the way that our community here in Vermilion County cares for their fellow neighbors who find themselves in places of need. You can give either at the Red Kettle when you leave a store or at the local office located at 855 East Fairchild Street in Danville. Continuing on our first page, leaders respond to Heister Yale departure. And again, by Chris D. Jankowski. The announcement of Heister Yale's departure has left local leaders feeling disappointed and frustrated. The facility has been in operation in Danville for over 50 years and will leave behind hundreds of people searching for work. Danville Mayor Ricky Jr. said he learned of the departure through Facebook. I learned from friends who work there in social media. To this day, the company hasn't had the decency to reach out to us directly, Williams said. Williams said the city, Vermilion Advantage, and the state tried to incentivize the company to stay in the community. The final incentive package provided by the city of Danville included a sanitary sewer extension, valued at upwards of $1 million, an enterprise zone expansion, rezoning of the selected parcel, and a $1.5 million cash incentive for the Heister Yale Group's relocation, Williams said. Additionally, a number of strong complimentary offers were extended by the site developer, private local foundations, the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, and the Office of the Governor. Williams added there's nothing more that we could have done to provide a better package, and the city just last year spent $25,000 to $30,000 to hire a consultant to show them how they could do that, Williams said. The day before Thanksgiving, we provided them with almost an additional $12 million in total new incentives, when they'd only asked for five more, and yet they still did this. Vermilion Advantage CEO Tracy Walfelt said both state and local leaders worked to keep Heister Yale from leaving and to attract new businesses. A local foundation even offered an additional $1 million to encourage them to stay, so it's not for lack of effort that the facility is moving to Indiana, she said. We work with the Commerce and Economic Opportunity, our local senators and representatives, even with the governor's office, to put together an incentive package, Walfelt said, and help somebody that's looking to locate here, and so we would continue to utilize every available resource that we have at our disposal to make this an attractive place to live and work. State Representative Brandon Schweizer called the move devastating news for our community. Schweizer added that while his heart goes out to employees impacted by the move, he says the state's policies are to blame. But we must also be honest with why closures like this keep happening across Illinois, Schweizer said. Our state's crushing tax burden, unpredictable regulatory climate, and anti-growth policy decisions are driving employers away instead of keeping them here. Businesses can't plan long-term in an environment where costs rise faster than they can adapt, and job creators are punished instead of encouraged to invest. He believes politics are the reason the plan is moving across the state lines. That doesn't excuse Hyster's decision, but it does make clear that Springfield priorities have consequences, Schweizer added. When policymakers choose higher taxes, more mandates, and constant uncertainty, it's working families who pay the price. Today, those consequences are hitting Danville hard. The representative added that he is working with others to ensure those who will be soon will be without a job will be okay. We're already working with state and local partners to ensure affected workers have access to job placement resources, retraining opportunities, and the support they need in the months ahead, he said. We will rally around these families because that's what our community does. Walfelt added that Vermilion Advantage is a great resource for job seekers. We have a really strong team here in this community between the Vermilion County Works, the college, Danville Area Community College, and more to help any employee who's looking to find a new job, Walfelt said. How can we best help those employees who are being affected and impacted by this decision? They can always call Vermilion Advantage and we can point them to those resources. The mayor added, Hyster Yale is part of the history of Danville. I think like just mentally and emotionally and morally, the fact that this place has been a fabric of our community for so long, the final vestige of it just being gone is what hurts people, Williams said. It's horrible economically and everything, but it's just like one thing that was part of the heart of who we are. Our final story today on the front page comes to us from Chad Dare with the headline, Mobile Market Provides Healthy Eating Options. And this is Dateline Indianola. How many times have you heard the popular proverb, an apple a day keeps the doctor away? While there isn't any real specific scientific data to verify this exact statement, most people believe that healthy eating does promote a healthy lifestyle. Carle Health is trying to do its part with the mobile market, with a vehicle similar to a large camper that travels around Vermilion County offering affordable groceries, including fresh produce, to communities with zero or few grocery options, helping to make eating fresh, healthy foods easier. One primary goal is to not only help making healthy eating affordable, but it is also to address the food deserts and food insecurities throughout Vermilion County, Danville, and the outlying community, said Bernie Rupert, the Vermilion Mobile Market coordinator and driver. In some of the outlying communities, like here in Indianola, there isn't a grocery store for miles, and a lot of these small towns have only a Casey's or a Dollar General and nothing else. All of these little towns used to have grocery stores. In some of the towns that we set up in, we hear stories that there was a grocery store here 50 to 60 years ago. We're trying to be part of that community and bring some of those conveniences back to these small towns. During a tour of the mobile market, Rupert pointed out that they had potatoes, regular and sweet, tomatoes, onions, corn, peppers, both red and green, lettuce, bananas, oranges, apples, and avocados available in their bins. All of the food is really fresh, said Kelly Parker, manager of Carle Mobile Health Services, who admits she buys sometimes from the mobile market for her family. I've had some of these fruits and vegetables keep for a couple of weeks. Each month, the mobile market makes stops at various locations around Danville, including Carle at the riverfront and the Danville YMCA, along with stops in Catlin, Collison, Fairmount, Fithian, Georgetown, Hoopston, Indianola, Muncie, Oakwood, Potomac, Ridge Farm, Rossville, Tilton, and Westville. We cover all of Vermilion County, Rupert said. We're grant-funded through the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, and we work under the banner of Vermilion County Community Health Cooperative. According to Carolyn Gordon, communications partner at Carle Health, the grant helps Carle Health extend its commitment to improving access and bringing high-quality care to those who need it most. At some of the stops during the month, Carle's mobile health clinic, a 40-foot-long vehicle with exam rooms, sets up alongside of the mobile market. Our mobile health clinic is full-service walk-in clinic for anyone and everyone, Parker said. People can address multiple areas of need in just one stop. That's also why the mobile market sets up at the Carle at the Riverfront location and Carle Hoopston Regional Health Center multiple times in a month. The Riverfront has been so successful because it's a hub for all of Vermilion County, Parker said. People come from all over the county to see their providers and their doctors. Us being there creates a hub where they can get their health care addressed. And when we're talking to your doctors about healthy food options, the food market's right in the parking lot for them. Parker added that Carl Health started a mobile market in Champaign County back in 2020, but they weren't able to sustain it. We're trying to do this one differently. We want to make this sustainable, she said. We want this to grow to when the grant dollars are done, and the grant dollars are for 5 years, we can keep this growing for a long future. This is still just the first year for the mobile market, but one thing that Parker was to add is the ability for the market to accept SNAP funds. We had applied to be SNAP eligible before the government shutdown, she said. That prolonged the situation, but we are still planning to accept SNAP benefits so that we're another resource for people to get healthy foods. The mobile market has both a commercial grade refrigerator and freezer on board, as Rupert and Parker envision them holding milk and dairy products, eggs, and even some meat products. Before Thanksgiving, they received a donation of hams and turkeys that were then distributed on its various stops. The idea is that you come on board and shop just like you do at a regular store, Rupert said. We'll have someone at the front to greet you and help you with your bags, explaining the process. And then after shopping, you can stop at the back to check out. Rupert is quick to point out that all prices are very reasonable. Our cost structure is just to get to that level of sustainability, he said. We're trying to keep prices as low as we can, so we're charging people to make money, but to put food on the shelves. Parker noted that the mobile market would appreciate any type of donations from the community, especially from those with home gardens. I know there are people out there that grow extra tomatoes or peppers and give them away to neighbors. We would love it if those same neighbors gave us their extras to where we could give them out to the community members who could really use the fresh produce. For more information on the Carl Mobile Market, go to their website at carl.org/services/mobile-market. And more about what's happening in Danville, too. There is some good news, and new businesses are coming to Danville. This comes to us from Christy Jankowski. Two developers are hoping to bring new businesses to Danville. During the Public Works meeting on Tuesday evening, Logan Kronk gave an overview of one of these new businesses set to open in the Midtown TIF district, located at 311 West Fairchild Street in the former Carl Building. Kronk read from a letter from the local developer highlighting some of the guarantees. The developer's intent is to white box it, so it removes everything out of it and makes it an open space, Kronk said. The plan is to put in an entertainment venue for families and kids. The family-friendly venue will have trampolines, rock climbing walls, and a restaurant. On the city's end, if the developer meets all the TIF guarantees, there has been a request for three separate payments to the tune of $700,000 in TIF reimbursement, Kronk said. He added there is a cap on the reimbursements each year, and the venue will have projected sales goals to meet to get the reimbursements. They won't just make $300,000 if they don't meet a sales goal, Kronk said. They're projecting about $1.5 million in revenue will be generated from restaurant sales, and that is about market standard from what they've seen, which leaves for the city around $60,000 in sales tax prior to reimbursement, Kronk added. The golden number is that was requested by the developers $1 million. Alderman John Cooper asked Kronk, is it also based on percentages, correct? If they don't hit a certain sales, they only get a percentage? To which Kronk replied, yes, it's based on 50% of their sales tax. So if they don't hit their sales, they don't reach the cap of $30,000. Cooper also questioned how many jobs the new business will bring to Danville. So we've got 25 construction jobs per year, plus 75 permanent jobs, Kronk said. He's broken it down. It's 12 for the playground, 12 for the trampoline, 1 for the arcade, 50 for the restaurant, plus 15 to 25 indirect jobs through suppliers and vendors. While there is no official white box date, Kronk said the city has placed a fairly aggressive completion date. Kronk added due to the large upfront cost into the investment, he looks for the developer to be rushing to get cash back for the business. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. is welcoming the new entertainment venue, stating it essentially kills two birds with one stone. I would just add, I know that one of the things that folks have said to me since I was an alderman, you know, is that we need more things for our people to do, especially our young people, Williams told Kronk and the alderman. Also, we need more restaurants, and so we get both of those things in one. And, you know, we have an outdoor wonderland here and anything you could want to do, Williams added about the venue. So I think this is a solution for a lot of those problems that folks have. Kronk sees success on the horizon if this development gets approved, as the TIF district is quite successful already. It's a very healthy TIF district, even with this project, if it will still have several hundreds of thousands of dollars remaining in it. The current cash balance is at $1.2 million, roughly, right now in the TIF district. Also, another developer, Jason Chico, was present to talk about the alderman about his plans for the former Red Lobster, which closed a few years ago. Chico is with Solutions Group out of Northbrook. "I've been working in retail development for 20-some-odd years," he told the alderman. "We were able to procure a contract to purchase it back in May, and I believe we're acquiring the property before the end of the year." He added the former Red Lobster will not be used as it currently is. "Our goal is always to redevelop it in a first-class manner, long-term lease," Jago said. "We're close to finalizing that. We're excited to hopefully announce that in the very near future." While this will be Jago's first development in Danville, Kronk added he has given him a list of properties to view for future possibilities. "We look forward to doing this first one and expanding and committing to the city and spending many dollars down here and look to continue that," Jago said. Kronk added it will cost the city $80,000 to tear down the former Red Lobster building. "That is what we're kind of conservatively projecting for the city to tear down and get it down to the dirt," Kronk said. There has been speculation online about what the business will be, but Kronk said he cannot release what it will be just yet. "We can for certain tell that of the restaurants listed in the exhibit, those are the only ones that the city of Danville would support with the incentive package," Kronk said. "This is a very real chance of one of those in that list signing a lease within the next month. The list of those that may come range from Chick-fil-A to Panda Express, Raising Cane's, Texas Roadhouse, Longhorn Steakhouse, and a few others. The good news of possibilities comes on the heels of Hyster Yale announcing the closure of their facility this week, to which Vermilion Advantage CEO Tracy Walfelt said it is welcome news. "Any new business here is wonderful," she said. "The opportunities to provide people with jobs and livable wages and opportunity to live and work and enjoy the community is good news." And both developers will be present at Tuesday's City Council meeting. We're a little past the midway point of our time together today, so let's take a look at the death notices that were received by Friday at 5 p.m. First up, we have Frederick C. Payton of Englewood, Florida. Frederick passed away on December 9th. A celebration of his life will be scheduled in the spring in Danville. Our second death notice was for Florence Lewis. She passed away in Seymour, Indiana on December 8th. Her family and friends paid their respects to her on December 14th. And we just ask that we please join Florence's family in sharing pictures, videos, and memories on her tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. Let's take a break from our hard news and take a look at our editorial and features pages today. We're going to start with an article from Dr. Richard Elghammer and his column Up Close with Dr. E, with the headline Holidays, Do's, and Don'ts. Here it comes, faster than a speeding bullet. No, not Superman. It's the holidays. The holidays are coming, and like a bullet train traveling at 220 miles an hour, they will arrive faster and unfortunately ahead of your ability to schedule and plan all the details you wish you could do to make this year's celebration a special time for your family. So perhaps this article can help. I've arranged today's column into do's and don'ts with the hope that these suggestions can lessen the pressure on you during the holiday season. Do give yourself permission to sit this one out. Many people have been knocked down by traumas and losses this year. Death, severe illness, divorce, job or home losses, and their ability to mobilize the energy necessary to cook, clean, arrange, or even smile just isn't there. Take the pressure off and don't expect to be in the holiday spirit, but one warning, it's in the next paragraph. Don't. If this year has been truly rough and you need to sit this holiday out, don't forget the children in your family or in your circle of relationships. Children yearn for holidays, especially if they're 12 or younger. Please keep them in mind. Can you remember the beauty of holiday celebrations when you were a child? Do prepare a meal using holiday recipes your family has handed down from past generations. Having a family meal with your own traditional family, as well as honoring past family members who are no longer living. Don't. Do not prepare special meals or holiday cookies, treats, and drinks without help. How about asking for culinary support from family members, even college-age kids and younger people, who have not been asked until now to assist in setting the table, slicing and dicing, or other food preparation. For a little fun, try this. Buy an apron or chef hat for your helpers. Do keep your children on a sleep-wake schedule that allows them to be rested. Holiday really jazzes kids up. And like a horse off its feed, your kids will be crankier and more vulnerable to colds and flu if you allow them to bend bedtimes too far. Do not expect the holiday season to be simple, easy, laid back, or smooth. Too many changes occur. Family members traveling, car trips, winter storms, all combine to form chaos. In addition, if your family has lost a loved one or if someone is too ill to make an appearance, try to expect and accept the emotional roller coaster related to family guests. Do play music to create the emotional setting of warmth, hope, and beauty. Make copies of the lyrics so your family can sing songs together. Don't forget about your own needs, sleep, and time to relax. Do spend more time with your kids, grandkids, or other children in your life. Don't try to have a perfect holiday or rebuild family relationships which need mending. The time for fixing relationships is after the holidays are over. Do holiday giving. Save spare change for holiday bell ringers and let your kids put coins in the buckets. Allow me to close with a poem, a holiday celebration about children, children's smiling faces. Children's smiling faces are the keys unlocking places in our hearts, hardened and sealed off by life's bitter pain. Children's singing voices are the melodic sources of inspiration, lifting us up from the stain of human guilt and shame. Children's giggles and laughters are the sweet marmalade to spread over life's disasters, and a reminder that after, when we are gone, they will sing the song that carries our name. Children's smiling faces beckon our soul to open spaces so a light can reside inside us to guide us through life's gloomy days of rain. For children are the seeds of the universe planted by divine hands in soils tended by us oh so briefly. Let their smiling faces, singing voices, laughter and giggles dwell in our hearts from now, this holiday season, to ever after. Happy holidays to all. And again, that comes to us from Dr. Richard Elkhammer. Thanks, Dr. E. Well, let's turn our attentions to sports, which I don't always do, but I think there is an exciting headline here for us, especially if you follow Indiana football. Indiana's Mendoza looking for historic Heisman, and this came to us from the Associated Press. The first time Fernando Mendoza put his hands on a Heisman trophy, he did it on a whim on a recruiting trip to Yale. On Saturday, he'll be on stage for the real deal. Mendoza enters this weekend having won the Associated Press Player of the Year Award and as the favorite to win college football's most prestigious individual award. He would be the first winner from Indiana University and the third with Hispanic roots, titles not lost on the once lightly recruited Miami native who started contemplating the storybook ending a few months ago. At the beginning of the year, I saw the list of the top 10 Heisman contenders and evidently my name wasn't there, he said. I was like, wow, I want to make a goal for myself. I prayed about, like, if I could make it to the ceremony, how cool that would be. Now that it's come to fruition, I'm able to share that moment with people who I appreciate it. It's such a cool moment. For Mendoza, his first and likely only season in Bloomington has been filled with memories. As fans watched him throw winning touchdown passes late in games against Iowa, Oregon, and Penn State, what he did behind the scenes, forming bonds with his new teammates, embracing family time, and savoring all those special celebrations, helped deliver program-changing victories like Saturday's 13-10 victory over number one Ohio State that gave Indiana its first Big Ten title since 1967, a 13-0 mark and the number one seed in the college football playoff. Along the way, Mendoza cherished his time studying film with his younger brother, Alberto, meeting with coaches, and hearing students serenade him with chants of "Heis Mendoza." The funny thing is, Fernando Mendoza never sought the spotlight. He just wanted to win. He's just the ultimate professional and a wonderful teammate, starting center Pat Coogan said. He prepares like no one I've ever seen. He works his butt off like no one I've ever seen. He's an awesome locker room guy on top of that. Here's my spoiler alert. He won. Congratulations, Mr. Mendoza. Well, since we're talking about Indiana, we might as well take a look at their NFL team because this is kind of unusual too. Here's the headline. Rivers returns under center for Colts from the Associated Press. The Seattle Seahawks might not find out until Sunday whether Philip Rivers will take his first NFL snap since 2020. Seattle, 10-3 in its sixth ranked overall defense, is preparing as if the eight-time Pro Bowler and 44-year-old grandfather could be under center for the reeling Indianapolis Colts. Seahawks coach Mike McDonald said, "It was only a matter of time until something crazy happened in the NFL this season. Rivers signing with Indianapolis sure seems to fit the bill. If anybody can pull it off, it's him," McDonald said. "Guy is probably one of the best competitors in the history of the NFL, and I'm sure he wouldn't do it if he didn't feel like he was ready. We're getting ready for him like he's been playing the whole time." Those preparations, though, have been atypical so far. Seattle defensive lineman Leonard Williams said the team has studied film of Rivers from his days with the Chargers, the franchise with which he spent the first 16 of his 17 NFL seasons before retiring after a swan song year with the Colts. Williams, 31, who himself has spent 11 seasons in the league, marveled at Rivers' willingness to return. "I feel like if I were retired that long, it would be hard to come back into the NFL," Williams said. "Either way, I feel like we always focus on ourselves, regardless of who's playing. We want to rush and get to the quarterback, regardless of who the quarterback is." And to Williams' point, it's no guarantee Rivers will even see the field, even though starter Daniel Jones suffered a season-ending torn right Achilles tendon injury in a 36-19 loss at Jacksonville, and rookie backup Riley Leonard also injured his right knee during that game. Veteran Brett Ripien was activated from the practice squad to the active roster Wednesday, and coach Shane Steichen could very well elect to start him over Rivers. Even so, the notion of Rivers, who's spent the past 5 years in Fairhope, Alabama, coaching St. Michael Catholic High School's football team, returning to NFL game competition after so many years away from the game is quite impressive. "Dadgummit, he's a good player," Cup said. "Shoot, it's Philip Rivers. His resume speaks for itself. Yeah, it's going to be real cool to be out there and on the field with a future Hall of Famer." I can't wait to watch football. I rarely have an opportunity to read some of the articles that come to us from the Amish Cook, but today it's really poignant, and I thought I would share it with you. It's called "Who Sleeps Where? Should the top bunk be reserved for the oldest, or should the younger ones take a turn in it?" The novelty of sleeping in the top bunk deteriorated some years ago. We were delighted when Daniel built two sets of sturdy cherry bunk beds for the children. They met the specs for DCFS for those who were in the foster system at the time. There was a girls' and a boys' room. It worked great. Then Daddy went to heaven. Things changed. Everyone wanted to be as close to Mom as they could, especially at night. Making room for them all in my little bedroom seemed like the only reasonable thing to do. The youngest one slept crosswise on a half-bed mattress we placed on the floor. Floor space was basically non-existent, but we didn't care. We had each other, and that was really all that mattered. Prior to my husband's death, I could not sleep well when sandwiched between two people when we had children with us in bed for one reason or another. Now I find myself sometimes sleeping with up to 4 or 5 children by morning. What a faithful God we serve. He knows just how much we can handle, down to allowing us to sleep in crowded quarters. Transitioning back to bedrooms has been a stretch, yet we need to function as normally as possible. This summer, the children were completely impressed with sleeping on our screened-in deck. Two queen mattresses worked well for all 6 of them. I recall being in Haiti at an orphanage where I was enthralled with all these dear children. When we were told they find comfort in sleeping together, my heart was touched. Today, it makes sense in a way that goes deeper than it did back then. If little hearts are lonely or sad, they find comfort in being closer to others. Now that summer's long gone and the temperatures on the deck have dropped well below freezing, it's a thing of the past for this year. I debated, prayed, and debated some more. There's a practical way to decide on a sleeping arrangement. We just need to find it. Finally, this week, I told the children I'll need their help. I have a plan. We'll take apart the bunk beds in the boys' room and place a large mattress on the floor where the boys can all sleep together. They were sold on the idea. I had young helpers as we backed out screws, disassembled, and carried out piece by piece of the bunk bed. We stood back to survey the change in the empty spot. "I could see where the bed post was," I remarked, referring to smudges on the wall. "I can see where feet were," Julia quipped. I laughed. Yep, that was right. This room had certainly had a lot of loving, and someday it could certainly use another painting. I got out some sudsy cleaner and sprayed on the wall where Hosanna and Joshua scrubbed away on it. We certainly wouldn't want to do without dirt. Surely then we would be missing out on healthy youngsters or healthy fun. Once the floor was cleaned and dried, we fetched a queen mattress and placed it in the corner. Warm circles chased around my heart as I thought of our friends, the Ravzi family, who also used mattresses on the floor for their large family and had experienced the miracle of adoption. At their house, our children loved playing on the mattresses on their level where they could easily get on and off. Along the front side of the mattresses, I placed a row of pillows for the four boys where I could easily reach all of them when I came to bless them and pray for them before they fall asleep. Bedtime isn't perfect, but it is precious. And how well I remember before Daniel passed, how it was one of the most intense part of the day for us. We both felt like there was a better way to get children, including those who'd been through trauma, to settle down peacefully. Today, I don't know. I don't feel like I found all those keys, but I look back and I see that God's been faithful every one of those nights. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News. I wish you a wonderful week. Stay warm, and we'll read again together soon.